stop us, but they can't. Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
very white guy.
And he is very white indeed. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We're going on our 62nd episode or so. So
62.
If this is your first time hearing us, however you found us, you can find the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. We're also, of course, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. Again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback.
Yep.
Yes. So you can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if it's 5 stars, we will read it here on the air as long as it's nice. And you can email us feedback at interracialjohn@gmail.com. And you can leave us a voicemail at 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we'll play it. And shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Eye Who Tips for our general feedback rules and policies. And we have some feedback voicemails we're going to play in a little bit, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
But what's been going on with you, sir?
I just realized this is like a 1 year anniversary. We did our first podcast the weekend before Labor Day last year.
I think. Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think so.
Don't you remember? It was later on.
We changed sites. We were on Blogger for like a month before we ended up with WordPress. So you're not going to have the date. Like, if you go to look at the date we posted it,
it'll be like
the first 7 episodes were posted
like the same day
in October or November. Gotcha,
okay. All right. Well, interesting. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I bet you if I went to SoundCloud, it would tell me because I feel like only the first couple episodes.
And I don't know if it keeps the history and how long, but
I'll say when I posted it. So
definitely.
Yeah. I'll check that out for sure.
Yeah.
Well, happy anniversary to you if it is or close to it anyway, certainly for sure.
Moving though, man.
We're moving this weekend into our new house here in the great city of Grand Rapids. And that's exciting, but, irritating. The one thing we didn't want to do was move twice, and here we are doing that.
And there's, like, this confluence. And we talked about it before, like, Grand Rapids and Southwest Michigan has this, like, formal type of nicety that's just not, like, I don't know. It's not really, like, Drew's modus operandi. It doesn't, like, the level of nice that exists here is just not my speed. So I've had to kind of, like, figure it out a little bit. And I feel like GR is, like, almost like inappropriately nice, like too nice. Like, I can't remember what it was, but there was a couple of occasions I'm like, fucking hey, can you just, like, I don't know, like, you come to a three-way stop and everybody's waiting for the other person. Like, oh, no, you go. It's like, fuck, somebody go.
Yeah. We were in traffic the other day, not because a lane closed, but because a sign erroneously said it was going to be closed. We were like, but the lane never closed, but the sign said it, so everybody got over.
I guess that's a perfect example. In New Jersey, when there's a lane that's going to close, and it's like two lanes and they say like left lane closed, the average individual guns it down the closed lane until the last minute and cuts in. That's like everybody does that. You just go down until it's closed and then you cut in. And what, somebody's not going to let you in? They're going to let you in.
No, and usually, like, at some point, it's clear the lane is going to be closing. It becomes a you go, I go type
of
situation.
Yeah, yeah, but it'll fill up. It'll be down to the last second.
Yeah.
You go, I go. And on a rare occasion, the right lane will fill up before that closed left lane, and people are kind of, like, doing a dick move, like, racing down.
Right.
And you'll see, on occasion, someone, like a truck or something, would pull into that closed left lane.
So people can't do that.
So people can't pass them, and then kind of, like, inch along, like, you're going to wait behind me. Like, that move that, like, sometimes occasionally happens when people are being dicks, that's the, like, normal move here.
Yeah, that's like everybody expects.
Everybody does it. Yeah. So the sign was like a blinking highway sign, said, left lane closed ahead. Not 1,000 feet, not 2 miles.
Just ahead.
Yeah. And the sign saying left lane closed ahead forced so many people to get into the right lane that traffic on a highway came to a stop. Like, we came to a screeching halt. A full stop. And it was like a good, like, 10-15 minute traffic jam because of a sign that said the left lane will be closed ahead, and it invariably was not.
It's crazy.
Right?
Well,
it was so weird.
It's funny.
And I did it. I got in the right lane. I'm like,
Everybody else is going. We better go, too. Yeah, that's definitely. And then, of course, there's all the irritations with, like, services and all of that crap with moving. Switch this, move that, blah, blah, blah.
I tweeted that Comcast is the Internet Explorer of services.
Comcast is the worst.
Obviously,
we're not going to be in Grand Rapids for the rest of our lives, but I'm telling you, I'm going to, like, honestly, every move, I add, like, a new, like, thing.
Criteria.
That I'm like, wherever we move, we got to have this. We move, cannot have Comcast as the only option.
Yeah, they can have two internet providers or two cable companies. just can't have one that's only Comcast.
And it cannot just be Comcast. Just can't.
Well, so I
get like a notch down rating on my opinion as a city.
Well, here's the very thing. I spent to move, you know, water, trash, and all the various services to put in our name in the new house. Some were online, click, click, 5 minutes. A couple were like phone calls. One was a little bit complicated. The water, I had to like send them proof that this is going to be my house. They couldn't do it until it was within so many days of the transfer date because they don't really change the water off. Anyway, I spent whatever time on like 7 or 8 other services. It was like 15 total minutes. I've spent fucking like 3 hours trying to get Comcast. And the thing that pissed me off is that at the end of the day, after like multiple phone calls and multiple trips into their place, the bottom line was you can't do anything in our system. I can't even set up a possible appointment for you until the current resident of your home cancels the service here. And you and I were talking about it, and you made a very astute comment that it probably has something to do with the law. And I think you're right in that if there's internet going to a home and the government wants to, you know, get that information, the IP address is tied to you as an individual. If you have two services going to the same address, you could have some like legal, like, oh, that wasn't me, that was my neighbor that looked up child porn.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think you're right that there's a, like, in their system, there's just a full hard stop, like whatever Comcast can and can't do. If there's a service at the address, done. Just stop. You can't do shit for anything else. Like, it's just, you're over until that service is not just like, I'm going to cancel it, but is actually canceled. Right? Because like the dude that's in our house is like, oh, I already called him and told him I'm going to cancel it effective on Saturday. And like, it didn't matter. I had to wait until Saturday. Right? So the thing that pissed me off is they didn't say that. There was nowhere. I was like, listen, if there's service at the current address, just stop. You can't do anything until that service is done. I went online and it's like, move your service, transfer made easy, right. You know, like, Xfinity, yeah, / move. And I put in all the information, my address, our account number, what's the new address you're moving to. And it's like, ooh, call in. I was like, okay, call in. Boop, beep, beep, boop, boop, boop. Half hour. Lady's real pleasant. Oh, yeah, no problem. We'll do this. We'll do that. She even made me an appointment. There'll be someone there Sunday at this time. Don't worry about it. We'll follow up with you. And they did. They followed up on Tuesday with a phone message saying, you got a call. It's not complete. So I call in this other number. This is not like the third thing I've done. And they're like, oh, yeah, we can't do this. We can't do that. I'm like, well, this is crazy. What? The other person lied to me? No, they just, you know, you can't do this. But you can do it. You just have to go into a store, like an actual Comcast store here in Philadelphia, or in Grand Rapids, of which there's only two, right? Like, not exactly conveniently located, like Comcast stores. And I got to bring a copy.
And what else do they do at the store? That's what I want to know.
They
too.
Sell shit. You can get, like, you know, their tablets and their security systems and shit.
Okay, got
And you
it.
Get equipment and stuff. Right. It's basically like the old, remember the Comcast store that was in Philadelphia that was like almost like a warehouse where it was just equipment? It's like one of those modernized. It's not now it's in a retail storefront and they sell shit.
Okay, anyway, got it.
So I'm there. And to their credit, that was relatively efficient. I didn't have to wait very long.
Right.
And get bored. But they tell me, bring a copy of the sale of your home, your closing documents, to prove that you're going to be the owner of this house. I'm like, that's a lot extreme, but fuck, okay. Like, here I'm now showing you my information. I get all the way there. The guy's like, oh, no, we can't do anything. We can't do this. It's just like, fuck me, man. Just, why'd you waste 2 hours on the phone, 2 trips out here? It's crazy.
We hate them, and their fucking remote sucks. Their interface sucks. They suck.
Yeah, they do. It's you're right. There's no competition. They don't give two fucks about nothing for anything.
They don't give a shit. Well, we are lucky enough today. We're going to be joined. We are joined by our O'Johner, associate producer, Kyle. But before we get to him, we got a couple of voicemails to play.
Oh, yeah.
So let's check those out. Let's see what the people are saying.
I always feel like someone's
calling.
Hey, Rick
Landrew. I was just curious if you guys are going to be on deck this week. Because, sorry about the voice. This is Ferocious Shines. I'm a little sick here. Because the black guy who hit Rod and Karen are on day vacation. Just looking to fill the void. That's all. No pressure.
We did an episode while Rod and Karen were on vacation.
Anyways. See ya. I should say, listen.
Didn't we do an episode?
We did two episodes last week, actually. We had one that we did by ourselves, and we had Chris on the show. So we actually had two episodes while Rod and Cam were on break. But I'm glad they're back. I missed them as well. So
I've heard her voicemail now a couple times. And
Leslie. Wait. This is Rosa Shadkin. Discount my earlier voice message.
Oh.
I checked my podcast thing, and you guys are in there.
Bada bing.
I'm going to go listen now. Have a great week. Bye.
Oh, cool.
So I was saying, I can't quite catch her first name.
Yeah, I can't either. And the transcribe is different every time.
I know, because Google does the like...
Like they transcribe it for you or whatever. We have one more.
Hi, my name is Diana. The reason for my call is that I was looking for a podcast today, and I found yours, and I really liked it. And I wanted to tell you that it was very entertaining, and it was also informative.
Oh, thank you.
Now I have a few more words and phrases to use to help white people understand white privilege. So I think that's a win-win in my book. Anyway, just wanted to let you know that, and I'll be listening to more.
Awesome. Bye.
Oh, awesome. Thanks, Diane. Cool. That's so sweet. Thanks, Diane.
She was looking for a podcast and found us.
Well, thank you. Again, if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can call 657-JAWNERS. That's JAWNERS. You can really do anything. You can just make a comment. You can ask us any questions. We're pretty good about answering them. And also, if you want to give feedback on Fear the Walking Dead, you can also leave your most irritating character of the week, something we'll be doing every week with Black Rob on Wednesday evenings to recap the show. So why don't we grab Carl and get into it and see what's going on with him.
Let's get the O'Johnner on.
All right, let's do it.
Hello, hello.
Hey. What's up? See money in the house.
I actually have a new intro music for you. You ready?
No, that's not his intro music.
That's not his intro music?
It'll be when I say to play it. Don't play it yet.
Oh, that's good intro music.
What's up? We are so happy to have our associate producer, Carl, back in the house for his, I guess I'm not supposed to say monthly visit, so I guess, you know.
It's a guest, inappropriate euphemistic qualities.
You say that, but anyways. Monthly visit. Yeah, his monthly guest
appearance. I like that.
Appearance.
Monthly visit.
See, monthly visit. Boom. How about that? Carl likes it. Carl is from St. Louis, but now resides in the suburb of Chicago. He is a self-proclaimed blurred. He's a huge fan of cats and also a fan of huge cats. And he works in the tech industry, and he's an all-around good dude. And the, as we always like to say, the original John, or probably the only person besides myself that's listened to every single moment of the Interracial John. So we are so happy to have you on the show, and welcome.
Thank you, thank you. Always glad to be here.
Yes, yes. So, you know, as we are apt to do, let's go ahead and play that song now.
Woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had to head on down to school cause the teacher said, everybody put on your thinking caps, cause we going back to school with What's Up with
Carl.
Ooh wee. What's up with
Carl? What's up with Carl?
Ooh wee.
What's up with Carl? What's up with Carl?
So, what's up with you, Carl?
I can't complain. Just, you know, trying to make it through the week. So, I didn't tell you guys that I was interviewing for another position in my life.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So, like
today
secret?
Was the final interview. It was an hour and a half long interview. Woo. With, I think it was...
Don't say who it is.
Five people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty intense. So, I feel good about it. We'll see.
Were they all white?
Yes.
No.
So, well, I do work in the tech industry.
Touche.
You're aware.
Touche.
So, yeah. So, it's actually another part of our business that is a lot of engineers. So, it's a lot of...
Oh, so it's within the same company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. So, I thought you were talking, like, leaving the... I don't want to say where, but I was like, dang, you've put in, like, 10-year, dude. You put in time. Don't leave.
It's been a while. Yeah. Yeah. It's the same company. So, hopefully it goes well. We'll see what happens. But,
does new letters behind your name help you with this?
It does. So nice. It helps out a lot, actually.
Well, I'll be sending all the good vibes out there for
five, you interviewed with five people. Coming. How long was the interview?
So it was like an hour and a half long. There were two people in the room with me, and then there were three people via telepresence. So,
telepresence.
Yeah.
Was it the like typical like behavioral, like, tell me about a time when you...
So this is a little different. So I've gone through all that stuff. This one was, all right, give us a 25-minute presentation about anything that you want to, including a 30, 60, 90-day plan. And then the latter half of it was scenario-based customer scenarios. So real life scenarios that they've actually gone through, and they wanted to see how I would react, you know, if I were faced with a similar situation. So
wow. That's interesting. And let me just say this. I had a mentee of mine who recently had to do interview that was like that. She had to do like a whole, you know, plan for this entity she was interviewing for, a non-for-profit. And I was like, you know, it's interesting. You did this work. She did this work as well. And there's nothing to stop them from doing whatever you told them, even if you don't get the job.
Right.
So they get like all these cool ideas sure. in this process, you know,
actually,
and then pick whoever they want. And I'm not saying it's a bad way to interview. I think it's interesting. Again, it's like a more opportunity hoarding for these companies.
So right. what you've described is like part and parcel to the advertising industry. Like a big ad client like Coca-Cola, they use the same agency forever and ever and a day. And they'll go out and say, oh, you know, we got this new project and we're thinking we might want to go outside our big Chai It Day agency. We're going to go with somebody else. So they'll open the door to like 12, 15 different agencies and they'll say, submit a proposal. It's got to be like this. It's got to be like that. And people spend $50,000 on this shit, and then Coca-Cola gets all these ideas for free that they give to the company, the ultimate high, which
no, but
is the
they
one
actually aren't able to do that. You sign NDAs, and that's actually proprietary information.
That's beginning to change because a lot of agencies have literally stopped doing these open cattle call bids because of that.
But I'm saying that it's definitely proprietary. You don't get to take people's actual like ideas to other ad companies. But it's different when it's just a job interview, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're like just one person.
They could do anything they wanted to. But it was funny, though. It's funny that you asked, Drew, if everybody was white. So I went through the hierarchy of this part of our business, and I would be the only white person.
What? Whoa.
The only in the entire vertical or
that
at this level?
That vertical space is just
that
you.
Space, that business unit of our organization. What?
Top down, you'd be the only black person in the entire business unit.
I think the only black person, yeah.
That's got to come with like a 10,000, that's like a 10% bump. I call it like the token bonus. I don't know what it is. You got to fucking pay me for that, goddammit.
Well, you know, so the folks that I interviewed with seem, you know, pretty nice, pretty down to earth. But, you know, obviously there's that part in the back of my mind. It's like, I fit in, you know, will I understand? Is the culture, you know, what's the culture going to
be like? Right.
I'm thinking you could have done your 30-minute presentation on anything you want on, like, white supremacy. I'm going to spend 30 minutes talking about white colonial bullshit.
Oh, I thought you said anything. You said anything,
right? Oh, business? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought
you heard anything. I got my letter. It said anything right on it.
Is anything.
You could be like clapping up there. This is my presentation, motherfucker. You are going to listen today. You're going to learn too, goddammit.
You're going to learn it. Oh, gosh. Oh, that's so funny.
You know, talking about interviews, I remember at the time, like, oh, I'm so mad I didn't get the job. But it was the most intense interview process I've ever had. They flew me out to Raleigh. I was there for just the day. They flew me in the morning, stayed overnight.
It was Dallas or something.
And then flew out the next day. And it was like an 8-hour, all fucking day interview. It included like the Wonderlic exam where you have to take 30 questions in 30 minutes. I'm not even kidding. And then it had like all kinds of just like, you know, intelligence and potential, this and that. But then the bit that was hard was what you said. There was three different people, three different teams in three different rooms. And you went from room to room to room. And each one was like a real world business scenario. That's like, okay, we've got this, this, and this data and this and this. And we want to figure this out and do this. Here you go. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Like one after the other.
Because usually when you have those scenarios, it's not just like right on the spot, solve right now. You have some more background on it. You have kind of a point of reference of what's going on. But this is just like, all right, right on the spot, solve this right now.
You know, and I remember when I was doing one because I was so, not like flummoxed, but like you're trying to like figure this out and you're trying to run through it. I did poorly because I literally didn't like, I don't know, like the numbers were large and I didn't. You know, like there was a common denominator of like 1,000. I didn't divide by 1,000 to make the numbers easier to work with. And then at the bottom, put a footnote like, these are in thousands. I was like, really? That you're going to knock me down for that? Fucking A, man.
And then it's the other part of it. Like, all right, so you go and you prepare, you put all this work in and you really show them how much you want to, you know, to do this job. And then at the end of the day, you're really preparing to go in so they can give you more work and make slightly more money.
Right.
But you know, it's not, it doesn't equate. So it's like, all right, I'm going to beg you for this job and show you how awesome I am. I'm just going to make a little bit more amount of money and I'm going to have twice as much work.
Right.
Thank you.
You know, we were bitching about Comcast. We had a friend that was a high up muckety muck and I forget what he called it, but it wasn't a promotion. It was basically like
it was a no motion.
A no motion.
Yeah. Got, was it like a lateral move?
No. He got all the responsibility and all the and shit the and none of the money.
Yeah. It's one of those where they're like, for like listen, 6 months. We're not ready to like give it to you yet. But,
do it for like half a year,
you know,
and then we'll go back.
Show us you want it, and then right. We'll hook you up, you know, kind of thing where it's like, great. So you just got half a year of free salary from me.
Yeah, Carl's
so
at least not the no great. Motion. It's no. The, it's the like, motion.
Well, I mean, it'll be a good move for me. I mean, you know, you go into it knowing that's kind of how it's going to be.
Right? Yeah, sure.
And I'm sure you think the same, at least for me in those situations. It's not always the money. It's the experience, the professional development, like, you know, the shit I'll be able to say in 2 years after having done this job. Is it worth, you know, so forth and so on. But good for you, man.
Yeah. Awesome. Well,
I'm glad the coven of white managers didn't fucking like it didn't ruin
they did not
it.
Brick me.
They looked a sage in the room afterwards.
What, you're gonna have to like give all of them one name, like just doesn't matter who it is, they're all just named Tim, you know?
Tim, 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 Tim lot of women in this segment.
Timothy, Tim, 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 Timothy, Tim.
Like you said, you're in tech, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, let's jump into the rest of the show. Let's do this.
Let's do it.
What is going on? The news is coming on.
So, apparently Steve Harvey taped his season premiere of his talk show, The Steve Harvey Show. And I'll just read the title of this article in Jezebel. Men go to Steve Harvey Show taping on, quote, what men really think that gets, quote, too rapey.
That's the lead of the article.
Too rapey. Okay, so Sunday.
So you're not informed in this at all, Carl?
No.
Okay.
Oh, you about to get your fucking mind blown. Let me
Steve
tell you something.
Fucking Harvey, dude.
On Sunday, a group of male Chicago comedians attended the season premiere taping of the Steve Harvey Show in Chicago. These men were part of an audience of roughly 2,000 at the Ford Oriental Theater downtown, who were all there for, quote, what men really think, the event. What men really think, according to accounts, is that it is acceptable for thousands of them to catcall and harass 150 women on stage. Advertised as an event intended for gentlemen of all backgrounds and ages, the taping appears to have been to be a more elaborate version of a segment that was part of an episode that aired during July called It's Raining Men, entitled What Men Really Think. The segment had featured a regular-sized studio audience of women with men on stage who were quizzed on questions like, what's more important, a pretty face or a great body? Because who gives a shit about that, of course. But this was a little more complicated. The attendees were sent a poll ahead of time. I'll read a few of the questions for you. Men often say women are crazy. What do they really mean? A, women get too emotional about stuff that doesn't matter. B, it's our way of putting you down when you try to control us. Or C, it just means we don't understand you.
That's it. There's no
There's
no none of the above.
That's, what in the hell?
Here's another one for you guys. For women who are hopelessly single, the most common reason is A, their attitude or personality.
Really?
B, their age. C, their level of attractiveness. Or D, they act desperate or thirsty.
Thirsty is there.
I want everybody to know that.
Well, so the two comedians that you're referencing in this article were on a podcast called Pop Fury, and we listened to it.
Yes.
And I won't say the whole show, but the depth of what they talked about, the mistakes that were made, it was a doomed failure. Like, they kind of didn't tell the dudes that it was going to be women. Like, they made it seem like it was dudes only. Yeah. And just all the kind of stuff was just bizarre.
It was insane. And so it was 10 hours long, the taping was.
Let's just
fucking start with that.
10 hours?
10 motherfucking hours.
Steve Harvey.
Yeah. And apparently at one point towards the end, they were very, very hungry and the audience started trolling fucking Steve, like, give us a sandwich. Like, screaming. I'm hungry.
Were they thirsty?
They were hungry. And that wasn't even like the worst part of the entire thing, because in reality, the women were heckled. I'll put a quote. There was one woman in yellow and people were just going crazy for this woman. Quote, I call the yellow one. Marry me, yellow. I love you, Yellow. Yellow's mine.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The wow is that Harvey and his team let that shit go on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, okay, keep taping.
There was one question where a woman asked, why do men want to have sex all the time? And they were shouted out, you bitch, it's your duty.
Literally.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so, like, A, this is horrendous, but the hype man / comedian that was working the
That's
crowd.
That's where the rapey part came
he
from.
He came out and literally said, come on, guys.
Guys, calm down. It sounds kind of rapey. It's getting too rapey in here.
That was like the hype comedian's like, whoa, right.
So,
it's a little rapey.
The comedian comes out and says it.
That's like Flavor Flav coming out being like, whoa, guys, it's a little rapey. It's a little rapey.
It's a little rapey. All right. Well, Flavor Flav never raped anybody. Why,
no, I'm saying he's a hype man. Him coming out and saying, like, the hype man's telling you it's too rapey. Not the associate producer. Not the fucking, not the women on stage. Like, the fucking hype man's like, whoa, it's kind
of
rapey.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of the guys talk about the,
is that an autoplay ad?
No, it's not an autoplay ad. It's the show, but I have to let it like buffer a little bit here. So they went on, again, Pop Fury podcast. I'm actually podcasting for them this week because we're going to play a little bit of their show for them. And they basically went through start to finish the whole thing. You know, the fact that it was 10 hours long, the fact that none of them were fed at all, that the women were there for the entire time as well, the entire 10 hours, the same women, how uncomfortable the women looked, that basically they literally were just acting like just full on pigs.
One of the two that's also
they're comedians.
There was a group of 10 or so comedians that were invited to be part of the audience in a specific row, so that like they'd have like, you know, comedian action shots and statements and stuff. And the one realized when this is like all like being overly the top rapey, he started doing a parody of like misogynist man, like pounding his chest.
He named his character last name culture, first name rape. So that was what he decided to embody. So he starts like growling and stuff, and people are like egging him on. But he was so horrendous. He acted as bad as he could possibly think of.
And listen to what
at the end, one of the other guys gave him a business card. He wanted to hire him. He's like, "You're awesome, man."
He was making like a like rape culture parody, pounding his chest,
and
acting a buffoon,
got him a job
and he got a fucking job.
The definition of rape culture. Okay, so this is them talking a little bit about the catcalling. So here we go.
And they were shouting out like, "You bitch! Like, it's your duty, and like,
do your one fucking job."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Good God!"
Shit like that.
There was no one there controlling them.
Okay, so that was another part. That was another element of the adversity that revealed these people's characters. So the show starts, and the whole show is based on like, "Hey, women, I'm Steve Harvey. I'm going to tell you what men are really thinking, not just because of my personal opinion, but because now I've got data. I've got survey results of these 2,000 men who will give you the answers to what you desperately need," which, again, is so problematic because the whole underlying assumption that he's making is that men and women have to be at odds and that there's no way to be in a relationship that's not a partnership. It's always going to be a struggle. So that's like his fundamental. That's how he's made his money. He doesn't want to hear about my critique of that. But anyway.
But he's going to.
One of these days when his if we recreate the movie Rocky, where I get to play Rocky and he's Apollo Creed, we'll do it.
Yeah, and just for those who don't, if you listen this far and still don't know who Steve Harvey is, I'm gonna give you this little bit.
Oh, yeah.
He has cheated on all three of the women he's been married to. Blames it on them for letting him be around other women.
He genuinely
believes that men can't be friends with women without wanting to sleep with them, and he has written a book about relationships.
Yeah. He believes that we are all hunters, that men are hunters. He talked about that a lot. Like, men are hunters. Man. We're hunting.
Which is actually funny because that was another point where my character, quote unquote, referred to myself as like a hunter who was just trying to hunt. And then a few minutes later, Steve Harvey said, "Men are hunters. We're just trying to."
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So you get an idea onto that. So then it goes a little bit further, and a guy actually comes out and he asks a question. So let's hear what happens when that occurs.
And one point they were just yelling, "You look good, Yellow, I want you, blah, blah, blah." And I saw a woman who was on stage left in yellow sitting in some sort of skirt that I don't know women's fashion very well. But it was like just above her knees. It didn't look provocative to me by any means. It looked completely normal by like prevalent. You'd see it all the time, that kind of clothing. And I saw her start tugging on her dress to get it pulled
because she was so afraid.
Because she was so uncomfortable. And it was also, it was not just that. When people would be asking, when women would be standing up and asking questions, and if it was something that men disagreed with or they didn't like how she looked, could see them start to kind of wilt, understandably, because 2,000 angry men were screaming at them.
Yeah.
was awful.
Okay, yeah. And not just about the women, but I believe men ask questions as well.
Oh yeah, so we started this, but the guy, there was one guy who, they asked us a question: how often do men like to have sex? And
and the options are
every day, you bitch.
Yeah, that's the only option. Well, no, but that's the answer. That's the answer not to how often do we want to, but how many. And that was the answer to the implicit question: how many days are we entitled to have sex? And that's
wow.
So that was the other thing.
Question was: how often do you want sex? How often do men want sex? Once a week, several times a week, or every day?
So they read this off. Steve Harvey's like, let's look at another question. We'll get women, I'll tell you how it is. And he reads these things off. Everyone starts shouting, every day. We need it every day. And then, of course, the results are just like moderate. The moderate, at least people are like, several times a week was pretty much the answer. And then a guy stood up in the audience who was starting to explain why he didn't want to have sex all the time. But he stood up and he was like, yeah, you know, I changed a new job. I'm starting my own business right now and I'm really tired a lot of times. Sometimes I get home to my girlfriend and I just want to sleep. And before he could finish, people were screaming at him that he was a pussy, that he was a homosexual, that he was all sorts of these things.
It was.
I'll give it to her if you won't.
It's like they just had to move on. Like, it was so weird. And there were other instances. Anybody who didn't give the most misogynistic answer or perspective on either side would just be like shut down.
So, yeah.
Sounds like a lovely season premiere.
Unbelievable.
That's the season premiere. Like, how do they cobble an episode?
Are they going to really, based on the way this sounds, like, how are they going to edit that into palatable daytime TV?
They actually are. And there's been lots of other people that came out and said, you know, they're going to have, you know, whatever, that they had the similar experience. Because basically there was some, like, you know, maybe they didn't actually, you know, do it. And maybe the people exaggerated. Comedians exaggerated.
These podcasters are not being truthful.
Right.
There's some hyperbole.
But then all these other people started writing in and they said stuff like...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they all were just like, yep, I was there. That shit was rapey as hell and it was horrible. And just so you know, that's pretty much what happened. So people
just
so many people wrote in and said the same thing. And so apparently it's going to air September 8th and 9th. I don't necessarily suggest that you actually watch it, but just letting you know, that's where it'll be.
All right, seriously, guys? I mean, really? The fuck, dude? The fuck?
Just.
Agreed.
Yeah. Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're going to play it, but, you know, like, the guys on the podcast almost sounded like they weren't trying to submarine their opportunities at the station. With Harvey's entertainment company. So, like, you know, I'm not blaming. This is kind of what happens when 2,000 guys get together. And I, you know, I don't owe any allegiance. I'm not faulting them for not being more vociferous. But I think Steve Harvey owns a lot of the responsibility.
A ton of it.
You know, in the moment, the setup, his producers, the people that are beneath him let this – they take their – you know, it's like – you take your cues from the people above you. And if Steve Harvey's like, yeah, let me tell you, ladies, like, you're going to do the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just, and who the fuck is he with these three divorces, cheating on everyone as women? And in fact, on the podcast, there's another moment where the guy said that Harvey came out, was like, listen, women, not every guy is going to cheat. No, you know, not every guys are, you know, are cheaters. They're all cheaters. You know, guys are good. And then, like, within 15 minutes, like, oh, you're all cheaters. I've cheated. We're all cheaters. Every guy's a cheater.
They all cheat.
Like, you just contradicted yourself in the span of, like, two breaths.
Clearly goes to show that there is money appealing to the lowest common denominator.
Sure, but it's weird because his show is supposed to – it's like mainly for women. That's who watch his show. So that's the part I don't understand. So some of these responses were – this one guy wrote in and said, the article you wrote was spot on, like legit spot on. No idea how they can show the guy who doesn't want sex on TV. It got bad.
That was the one I said was a homosexual.
Yeah. So Steve Harvey, you know the show, they put a statement out. The nature of the topic alone can elicit strong opinions from both men and women. While we always encourage a healthy debate, we do not condone or tolerate rude or disrespectful behavior towards our audience or any of our guests. We are very proud of the episodes that we produce and are confident that our national audience will find the conversation both insightful and entertaining. AKA, they know a shit ton more people are going to be watching that bullshit because of this shit.
Are they, and I guess, so in their statement, we don't tolerate bad behavior or rudeness or whatever.
Unless they pay for tickets.
Well, I guess that means that, like, I got yellow. Yellow's mine. Yellow's like, that's okay.
That's okay to him, but it would be. They're hunting. They're
every day,
hunting.
Bitch.
They're
every day.
Hunting. They're just hunting.
But I
guys.
Think it goes to that culture, right? I mean, you know, they don't see that or he doesn't see that as a bad thing.
Nope.
And that's the problem. Yeah. That is entirely the problem.
You know what? And you're right about, I'm not saying this is like a form of exposure trolling, but fuck, he's going to get, this isn't going to hurt him at all.
No way. It's going to only be,
they're
going to
do more. They're going to do another, they're going to do a reverse episode. Better for him. They're going to end the season with the same shit.
It's terrible. It's just going to get worse and worse. Oh, how many eyebrows we got from letting this bullshit happen and these women get harassed for 10 hours? Let's do it 10 times next year. That's what it's going to be like. Anyways. Mm. So fuck you, Steve Harvey. Long story short.
Yeah. That's crazy. So on to, I guess, similarly depressing news, long-term effects of trauma is showing that Holocaust survivors, that the trauma is potentially passed on to children through their genes.
Oh, my goodness.
That genetic changes stemming from trauma suffered by the Holocaust survivors are capable of being passed on to their children. The clear sign yet that one person's life experience can affect subsequent generations. It was a conclusion from a research team at Mount Sinai. There is, I wouldn't say some controversy, but the idea itself is controversial. A scientific convention would state that genes contained in DNA are transmitted biological information, don't go from generation to generation based on environment. But they are showing that genes can be modified by, I don't know, environmental factors, yeah. Chemicals, and stress.
Stress certainly could do it, too.
Yeah. Something like the Holocaust, certainly. Yeah.
I don't like absolutes in any area of science. I just feel like we know way less than we don't know.
Right.
We know way less than we don't know. Exactly. Right. So to me, like, I could see that. So much affects our bodies that we don't give any credence to, whether it's the temperature of the air and all sorts of stuff that we don't really pay attention to all the time. So I don't know. I think I could see that. But what was interesting to me when I read that was that I just started thinking about, you know, black people in this country and,
sure.
Yeah.
And the, you know, generational accumulation of, you know, this supremacist society that we live in and what that does, not just on a, now we're talking about a genetic level. We've already talked about the psychological effects of it. We've talked about the environmental effects of it, the economic effects of it. But here we're talking about...
they call it epigenetic inheritance.
Yeah. I mean, that's... This is... Wow.
Mm. And you know, we've seen and we've talked about on our show that there are, you know, being black in America has a toll when it comes to, you know, you, as black individuals, you're devoting brain power and just time and energy and stress levels and hormone levels because black in America is under attack, right? Like that literally causes symptoms today. How could that, you know, if this epigenetic inheritance is real, that long-term stress level living black in America, and of course, you know, there's different where you live and, you know, socioeconomic status over and so on. But I'm with you, Leslie. If epigenetic inheritance is a thing, I don't doubt that it's, you know, it would be seen within the black community living under white supremacist patriarchal bullshit in America.
Mm-hmm. Or, and, I mean, that also goes back to what I said earlier with the interview. I mean, those are things that I have to worry about. You know, am I going to fit in this culture where I'm the only black person? So, you know, that, like you said, that takes extra energy for me to kind of navigate that, aware of that.
You know, a white dude in that same interview, there's a moment or something that's like, just like 1/10 of a fraction of off color, and a white dude like chuckles, and everybody chuckles, and it's like wasn't even a blip. White dude wouldn't even remember it. White dude be like, "Oh, what were you talking about? That incident? I don't remember what you're talking about." Same exact interview, black dude. It's 1/10 of a fraction inappropriate. All of a sudden, you're like, "Wait a minute, that was kind of inappropriate. This is weird."
Right.
You know, like your entire, like the rest of that interview is kind of like, I don't want to say it's fucked, but it's so different. It's very different, and that's just one little minor thing.
Yeah, I think beyond that, though, I say this all the time, is like one of the things I think that one of the hurdles white people can't get over is that they're so used to everything centering around them. They never have to think about on a regular basis how other people will react to them or are affected by them. And so on the flip side of that, because we as black people live in a white world, we're always having to know how white people are going to respond to it, what the correct response is, and then we have to think about how we are going to be responding to it. It's like a double
extra
awareness that just always has to be there. It's why code switching exists. It's why it's just a different navigation in the world. And so, yeah, I mean, of course you're taking up more brain power. Duh. You just have to think of twice as many things in the same amount of time to respond however you're going to respond. On the flip side of that, though, is seven black women will take over the newsstands of multiple September issues, which is really exciting. I don't know if you guys know, but the September issue of almost any magazine is like the crowning glory. It's the big one, has the most ad pages, the most everything. Yeah. There even was a 2009 documentary called The September Issue about the Vogue editors putting together what becomes their style bible, basically, for the whole year. And the queen, Bey herself, she's going to be on the cover of Vogue. She was not, she is uncharacteristically, I should say, for Vogue at least, not doing any interviews. She has not spoken a single word or answered a direct question in over a year from a reporter. I don't know if you guys were aware of that. That's a fact.
Boss.
And she has literally not answered a single question. She's put out statements and she's done stuff like that, but a direct question from someone she has not answered ever, or not ever, but in the last 12 months. But
she have to.
She has a huge spread and she's on the cover of Vogue. The other six are the GOAT herself, Serena Williams, on the cover of New York Magazine. Quote from her, "I will not give these people the validation. I will not stand down." When Serena Williams and pulling for her to do really well in the U.S. Open and hit that Grand Slam. I'm so excited for her. Kerry Washington is on the cover of Self Magazine. She says, "I have to take care of myself in order to live the life I want to live. It's important to have rest days, but in the long run, if I don't work out for like 3 days, I feel worse, not better." Misty Copeland, ballerina extraordinaire, is on the cover of Essence magazine.
I'm so hoping you're going to be like, Playboy.
No,
Misty Copeland's going to be like, come on, say Playboy. Come on, say Playboy. God damn it.
I'm going to continue to be who I am, and my experience as a black woman has made me who I am. All of a sudden, now that I'm in this position, I'm not going to say I'm just a dancer. It's a huge deal because I'm a black woman. That's why it's a big deal. Willow Smith is on the cover of ID. She says, "Once you realize that there's something more than what you've been given permission to believe, then a whole other dimension of life is opened up to you. Other dimension of creation, of laughter, of living, of everything."
Did that just come out of like a 14-year-old's fucking
crazy
mouth?
Those crazy-ass futuristic fucking...
Did that quote really
Smith
come out of a 14?
Crazy,
how old is Willow? She can't be 15.
I think she's not even 15 yet.
And good Lord.
We've got Amanda...
At that age, I was like, am I going to pick my nose? Or am I going to... I mean, come
right.
on.
That's...
Amanda Stenberg, who I think is Jaden's girlfriend, I think, is on the cover of Days magazine. And she says, "I want to make things that have an impact on how we look at the world. I know it's a tall glass to fill, but it's a glass that really does need to be filled as an African-American woman." And Sierra is on the cover of Shape magazine. And she says, "I truly believe that if you put your goals in writing, speak them out loud, and work for them, they will happen." So congrats to all of those seven beautiful black women. That's really awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. You know, we don't have any lame duck blackness, but I just had to because Carl sent this.
Oh. Uh-oh. This song is so awesome.
I just I had to get a little bit in. That's the best fucking version of that song ever, Carl. Where'd you find it?
It was on Instagram, and it was Pete Rock.
Oh, really?
That was from his page, yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah, I told you that, Drew, that you tagged me on Instagram, and I was like, oh, my God, this sounds so cool, and then I went and searched for it. And it was like, boom, so good.
Dope.
The other thing that happened this week was Trans Liberation Day on Tuesday, which was a really exciting and a day for people to lift up. And Black Lives Matter really took the day to heart and held vigils. I think at last count was like 14 or 15 of them across, not vigils, but actions. Different people did different things, but just to lift up the names and the lives of Black trans women in particular who have been lost, and just to allow support for them. I don't know if you are aware, but the average life expectancy for a trans Black woman is 35
years.
Yeah,
I read that at our we went to an action here in Grand Rapids, and they did some chalk. What do you call that? Just chalking.
Chalk out.
Chalking. Yeah. And then, and one of them said the average life expectancy for a Black trans woman is 35. And I just, something about that number
Yeah, it's incomprehensible.
Yeah. I mean, it really is.
35.
That's the half the life expectancy, more than half the life expectancy of the average citizen.
So nearly 20 transgender women have been murdered this year alone, most of them women of color. And even today I saw there was a trans woman of color that had been misgendered after her death. And so nobody knew she had been lost. And so, you know, even that number continues to rise even after the fact. So Trans Liberation Tuesday, and there were actions all over the country, and we went to one here in Grand Rapids, which was, I thought it was actually really good action, actually. I thought it was effective and definitely got that out. I'm going to play a real quick clip of Miss Major, who is a pioneer in the trans community and one of the original protesters at Stonewall, who has been whitewashed out of the movie that's coming out soon, but she spoke in San Francisco. So that's how.
Okay, I'm glad that you all turned out, and I'm really happy. Okay, I'm glad that y'all turned out.
It's but it's also taking mouth, honey.
No, it's like taking dick. I'm not doing that. But I have a reputation to a home. Okay. Anyway, I'm glad that y'all are here, and that this is important for the girls, because we've been suffering through this shit for a very long time. This is not anything new. None of us are shocked about it. We're just dismayed that it's still happening again and again and again. And it's not that the police are doing it. They're just sanctioning it. So when you look at a transgender girl, just imagine above her head is a halo that says, open season on bitches. Well, we got to end that shit. It has to stop. And I'm glad that you're here, but don't just do this shit here.
Right.
Take this crap home. Talk to the people who don't know about us.
Right.
Tell people we exist. Let them know that we're here. And if they see somebody, don't point at them. Go up and say fucking hello.
Yes.
Get to know us. We don't fucking bite. Okay. Nibble maybe, but not bite.
Yes.
You know, we have to stand together. This affects all of us. Whether it affects you today, that's nice. Tomorrow, it can. If it doesn't stop here, it will continue to go and grow and consume and implode on all of us. So each and every one of us has to keep in mind, take this shit home. Tell somebody about it. Tell your family. Tell your friends. Let them know that this shit has got to stop.
So, yeah, so I'll put links to Miss Major's speech and a couple of other ones as well. But I had the pleasure of meeting Miss Major at M4BL. She was there. She spoke at our first night, and I got to speak with her quite a bit as well as she was getting a pedicure in the healing room, which was really cool. She's amazing and really inspiring. And I have to say that for me, this issue of Black Trans Lives Matter is something that I feel really strongly about after a movement for Black Lives. I would say, and this is something I think I spoke with Ricky about it afterwards, about how we, you know, conceptually, of course we think and know and affirm that Black trans lives matter, but before movement for Black Lives, it didn't hit home for me like it does now. And it's so interesting, just, you know, I have had friends that were trans women before, but, you know, really, being in community with them was such a pleasure. And they also took over the stage on the second day to present some just demands that they had in order to be comfortable in the spaces that we were building together. And I saw so much power in that, and the loving way in which loving but firm way they were able to get their point across to us was just beautiful. And
yeah.
So I thought it was really great to see people supporting them.
We talked about that on our show. Just, you know, I had an experience, and we've been watching I Am Kate, Caitlyn Jenner. And I kind of the same thing, just really feel very, like you, Leslie, feel very differently about, you know, the trans lives matter movement, for lack of a better description. And I thought even, you know, a good example of that was Kate herself on the show.
Yeah.
And I picked up right away. She's talking with some other trans individuals that she's got, like, a, you know, collection of a group of friends, a little inner circle, and she's talking to them, and she had used the phrase they to refer to trans individuals, and was like, you know, they this and they that. And I said to Liz, wow, I can't believe she said they. And like on cue on the show, one of the women does the, like, you know, what they call, like, the confessional, where, like, they're showing you the reality show, and then one of the people are like, days later, like,
yes, confessional,
know, confessional stuff. And she says, I'm really disappointed that she's not saying we, that she's using they. Mm-hmm. And there was another trans woman, a black woman, that just, like you said, Leslie, and really didn't, wasn't rude, wasn't mean, but was very firm. Was like, we need you to say we. You're going to have to say we moving forward. You know, just very clear about it. And why it was important and what it meant. And to Caitlin's credit, she's, I don't think she set out to be a spokesperson in the trans community, but very clearly and obviously is. And I think she's accepted that responsibility and the benefits and the privilege that come with that, and the benefits and privilege she has from wealth. And she's really accepted it powerfully. It's and she right away, so she hears this person, says, okay, you know, got it. And to a minute later, holds up her glass and says, to we, you know, and clinks glasses, and her language changed immediately.
Yeah,
immediately.
So, I mean, they edit it, so, but yeah. I'm just saying, you know, they
edit it.
What was her apprehension to begin with in saying them instead of we?
It wasn't even apprehension.
Yeah, I don't think it was apprehension. I just think that after, you know, 65 years, yeah, of it not being in the outside of a community that even you wanted to be in, but you weren't in. I just think for her, it was a level of that. And then I also think, I'm sure that there's, you know, a subconscious and, a base level of, like, I don't want to be associated, you know, trying to be accepted and what that means. I'm sure it was a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
But I think most of it was just her not.
I think it was 62
seeing
years.
Herself as part of that.
Yeah,
community,
62
you know?
Years of language being one way,
right?
And you know, just because she all of a sudden, you know, came out and was on the television saying I'm trans, and you know, Caitlin and she and her still hadn't quite thought of
made that leap.
Us and we, yeah.
And
it was just a really good friend that was like, you're gonna have to do this.
Yeah, you know? She was just like, you know, it's just gonna be a case that you're gonna have to say we. Because, you know, she was just real. Me. Yeah, she just was really just like, yeah, you're just
like you
have
said,
to.
Like Miss Major's like, no, yeah. This is how it's going to be.
No, it's going to be like right, this.
Yeah. Not in like a shitty way, and not in a fuck you, I hate you.
In a
you
matter
way.
Of fact way.
Just a matter of fact
you know?
Way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a way that almost, you know, you think of a black trans woman, is there any other marginalization that intersects, you know, more violent? Groups.
No, I think a black trans woman, I mean, they have to deal with racial issues. They have to deal with gender issues. They have to deal with
misogyny.
Misogyny. They have to deal with sexual orientation. I mean, it's all of this. They have to deal with all of these potential landmines.
It's about as othering as you could get. And I think an individual navigating life in that way almost would just by nature be pretty used to figuring out a way to get what they need.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's
because it's a lot
violent.
About survival.
Yeah.
For sure. But we want all of us as black people to thrive, not just survive. So that's why I really am glad to see these discussions happening and this, you know, general realization that, you know, when we say Black Lives Matter, it means like all of them. So there's no caveats to that.
Yeah.
It's not Black Lives Matter except or almost all Black Lives Matter. No.
And I love that about the movement. There's this fierce, like, if it's not intersectional, it ain't shit. Mm-hmm. And I affirm that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been a while, but God damn it. Bad boys, what you want, what you want, what you gonna do? When Chevy John Brown come for you? Yes, all caps. And this one's back in Philly.
Oh, Philly.
Yeah, so let's say his name, Matthew Zagurski, officer, who's now been relieved. He's, I'm sure, paid, but he's no longer on the streets and
he's
no longer armed. But I'll let him do all the talking here, because why not?
You and your friend got any money by these thorough show tickets? Support your police department? $10 each, man. Either you buy these or I take your car. Because it's unregistered. $10 each, man. Support your police department. You got any kids?
I do not.
Do you have any kids?
No.
You got any sweetheart?
Yeah. I'd rather take my girl than this guy.
It looks like you want to look like two fruitcakes. You know,
that's
all right. All right, well, listen, my man.
Sorry, I gave you the money.
$10
a piece. Pay there.
No. You already paid. You got these tickets, man. Go support your police department.
Okay.
Support cops like me that instead of taking your you two walking,
I
just buy these tickets. All right. That's it.
Cool.
All right, you got $30, $10 a piece.
$30? Can I get two? I don't want to take this guy.
Well, let him buy it too, or else I'll take the
I'm going to do it this $5.
Yeah.
Who's the button?
Yeah.
Man.
Oh my God.
And actually, here, there's another video. Oh, it's not in here. Got a little, I'll say a little bit worse, but there's a second video where he's asking about, dude's got pink windshield wipers. And he's like, what's up with the pink, man? He's like, oh, it's breast cancer. My grandma went through it. Breast cancer, I can understand, but you support breast cancer another way. You look like you're a fruitcake. You know what? Like, literally, like, he's making, like, homophobic jokes about dude's fucking pink wipers. He's shaking them down for fucking three tickets for $30.
Just, so he says.
Just gross.
Yeah, exactly. Where that money going?
So he says. Get the fuck out of here.
He sold those tickets, whatever they were. Yeah. Who the fuck knows?
Dick. Oh, my God.
That's these thrill show horrible. Tickets? You got any money for these thrill show tickets?
Terrible.
Ramsey's, put them on desk duty.
Terrible.
So, yeah. Yes, old caps.
Well, let's go to a little bit better. So we got...
Who runs the world? Black girls.
That's right. Dope black girls. Big congratulations to Jamaican swimmer. Let me fix that. Big up to Jamaican swimmer, Aaliyah Atkinson.
Blap.
Blap, blap, blap. Who is the new... But how about some fucking horns for Aaliyah? The fuck?
Oh, all right.
Come on, man. Blap, 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 blap. Anyways, big congratulations.
Is that enough horns?
That's good. To Jamaican swimmer Aaliyah Atkinson, who is a new 100-meter breaststroke champion. And Atkinson completed the race in 1 minute and 2.36 seconds at the FINA World Swimming Championships in Doha at the weekend, equaling the record set by Lithuanian swimmer Rua whatever. She's the first black woman to win a world swimming title ever in the history of ever.
And Usain running through the world championships.
Yeah, but he's not a dope black girl, so don't ballgard into
I'm
my
saying
face
Jamaica. Right. Jamaica.
Yeah, we doing on big point, things out dude. Here. Yeah. It's funny whenever
Jamaicans are winning swimming things now.
Yeah, dude,
look out,
started
world.
Breaking into
look
swimming
out, world.
Now. We
look
if
out.
If there's speed needed, we're gonna be there. We're gonna be there. We're gonna be there.
Except if it's on bobsled ice.
Well, hey, we did all right
still
there.
Some time.
That's right. We still cultivating that part.
Watch out, NHL.
That's right. As usual, whenever we have a dope black girl, we are required to make sure we highlight a dumbass white guy. So
dumbass white guy. So in a town, they're trying to name a parkway, a portion of it, Louisiana, MLK. And guy starts with the – I'm not racist, but if you rename this half-stretch mile, I'll show you my racist ways. Like literally like threatened racism because they were going to name a street – in honor of MLK.
A half a mile of a street.
Yeah.
Let's be clear on that.
And so. In which all, almost the entire neighborhood's black, and 27 of the 31 homes have all voted to change the name of the street. And this guy just, and his logic was that MLK Boulevard and other towns are, you know, crime riddled and there's drugs, and we don't want that in our town. That, like, you know, naming the street is, it doesn't matter. But literally, like, threatened, like, oh, you know, I'm not racist, but if you fucking name this MLK Boulevard, I am going to show you some racism.
So
don't make me get all racisty. I don't know. I really don't know. It's a threat. It's the weirdest.
What does that look like?
Every day? Bigger Confederate flag? Fucking.
Right.
He's going to shotgun more beer? And I don't know. I mean, I think in his mind, it means violence. I think it means, like, you know, yeah. Death or something. That's crazy.
Show my racistness.
Yeah, it's just fucking. I just literally, and the clip's not playing on the website. But he starts off with, "I'm not racist.
I'm not racist. But if you do this, you're gonna see how racist I could get.
I'm gonna
be racist all over you.
I'm not racist, y'all. I'm not racist right now.
But I could get racist in a real quick.
Jim, you've
just
seen me.
Wait.
You've
you
seen
know,
me on Racism 11.
Ask Billy Bob. He knows how racist I can get.
It's like, people. Don't make me do the fucking like." I run, what's the Contra code? Don't make me do the Contra racism code and fucking power up this bitch. I'm going to get real racist in here.
What
you
is
sons
it?
Sons of bitches.
AA33 backspace down, 2 right. Or whatever.
Up, up, not right.
Hood, clan, clan, KKK. I'm going to get real.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm just being honest, like, as a white dude, like in Louisiana, at a place saying, I'm not that racist, but like, I'm gonna get racist. Like, I really, what more racism could he be? Like, yeah, is he talking about killing? He's talking about lynching, I really think.
Is that how racist he can get?
I don't know.
I don't know what that means, but because whatever he was saying was already pretty racist, so yeah.
Right, exactly.
And
his first sentence by saying, I'm not racist. So that's the precursor.
I'm not saying there was like thought and logic behind this, but I wonder, like, what was his best case scenario? Like, I'm gonna threaten them with some real racism, and then they're not gonna do it. They're not gonna name him. I'm gonna win.
Oh, wait. Well, he's going to get racist. Well, let's not do it then. No, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. He says he's going to get racist. Wait, I don't want to get into that.
I changed my vote.
To get into that, you guys.
I think we should name it Robert E. Lee.
That's MLK. What his name now, I think.
Someone tweeted, it was a reporter that started following me. And when someone follows you, just go to their timeline. And they're from New Orleans. And they tweeted like, oh, you know, community members get together to take down racist monuments. And I quote tweeted it like the Robert E. Lee grocery store chain. like
they have an You're entire. You going to take that down too?
It's literally called Robert E. Lee Grocery.
Yeah.
Bojangles? Yeah.
Yeah. Is that going to come down? I don't think so. Because I think
monuments.
They have commercials on TV. So.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyways, well, Drew, it's time for you to get on the hot seat a little bit here.
Oh, we're going to answer some questions?
Yeah, well, BuzzFeed put out this video, 24 questions black people have for white people. And since you are, as I always say, very, very white.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so we figured we could have you answer these questions.
Sure.
So last I checked, well, let's play the video and let's see white. What the deal is with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm ready.
It's ready, guys. 24 questions black people have.
I do.
Media
I do.
And culture.
Why
here we go.
Why do you always make such horrible decisions in horror movies? It's not cool to split up.
Why do you freak out when black people are cast to play white fictional characters?
That is the.
Do you have that one?
I don't. What I speak. I speak for all whiteness because I am. You know, we're a monolith, and I count for all white people.
Sure.
I personally don't understand that as well. It's a little bit bizarre, especially fictional characters.
They're always fictional fucking characters. Oh, never in the history of ever has a black person been cast to play a real white person. And conversely, we have seen time and time again that white people are happily cast as actual black people. So I don't understand. Like they're fake people.
The one that is the most egregious is Rue in Hunger Games. Who is described as black, like in the, she's from the district of black people, and people were like shitty that they.
My thing about that whole thing about the Hunger Games, like, did they just think that there were no black people in this other?
Oh yeah, any future dystopic utopic any utopia or dystopia ever in the future, no black people.
Yeah, well, not Star Trek. Not Star Trek people. Let's get it together, okay? All right, here we go. Some more questions.
What's the big deal if Idris Elba plays James Bond? I would go see it twice.
Why is a big butt and big lips considered attractive on a white woman, but they're unattractive on a black woman?
Now, and that's just straight stupid because a big ass on a white woman's like flat and pancakey and just, it's not always good. You know what I'm saying? Like there's good big, like white girls can have like decent like junk in the trunk, but like not really.
Did he just say junk in the trunk, Carl?
But a black woman's got some thickness. It's always good.
Thickness.
Drew, what you know about that thickness?
Married, Anna.
Drew likes his thickums. Everybody knows.
Everyone knows
man.
I'm an ass man.
Facts.
It's not a fucking secret.
Yeah, it's not a secret.
Yeah, honestly, that one's it's coming. It comes full circle. Like now, white women are like plumping lips and doing shit like beasting and shit to make them look big. Like the Kim Kardashian big butts kind of coming in. It's oddly being, you know, appropriate, like, not oddly, it's being appropriated like everything, consumed. And before we consume it, we have to shit on it. We have to tear it down.
Is that the first part?
Yeah, when we consume blackness, first we got to, like, crap on it, tear it down, you know, deem it like, oh, that's blah, blah. We would never want that. Oh, my God, look at that. We're going to take that.
Okay, got it.
Really think Miley is the one who created twerking? Really?
Why am I supposed to teach you how to twerk? I don't know how to twerk.
Why is it that white people always act as though they have discovered a new trend when people of color have been doing it for virtually years?
Why is it when a black woman wears her hair natural, it's seen as inappropriate, but when a white woman does, it's praised?
That goes deep. Like the military, like they literally like natural black women's hair is deemed fucking like aggressive, inappropriate. Like, what the fuck are you fucking talking about? That to me,
your hair be aggressive.
And the styles
that white people
the styles that are acceptable are those that are, you know, approximating whiteness. You know, and to get a perm, you know, to have your hair straightened, that takes some chemicals. That's not exactly the, like, you know, greatest thing. I'm not doubting any, not saying anyone should or should. I'm not talking about it. But, you know, like, to say that that's the only acceptable hairstyle is to, you know, treat it and make it look, you know, in some ways whiter. That's kind of fucked up. And it, that goes all over military, corporate. You know, there's, I don't think it's a, I know it's not a protected anything. Any job can be like, nope, your hair's a problem.
For sure.
It's too big.
For sure.
You got to do something with it.
Was born with, so you wearing it as a trend is not cute.
Like, can you appropriate my student loans?
Why is it that white crime is seen as an isolated incident, but black crime is a representation of my entire community?
When we
supremacy.
That's
intentional. Absolutely.
Okay, got it.
We see a story on TV about a white serial killer. I don't automatically assume that all white people must be serial killers too.
Talking about race make you feel so uncomfortable?
Is it because you think that you'll be perceived as racist if you talk about race?
You don't really believe that racism is over because we have a black president, do you?
Why?
So no, I don't think anyone actually believes that. And why is because white fragility. And that's, again, a hallmark of supremacy, that white supremacy has deliberately obfuscated information from us and kept it from us. And then it's deliberately not given us the tools to have those discussions so that when we do have those discussions, we take things personal, we get defensive, we get, you know, upset and fragile, and, you know, our feelings are more important than, you know, anything else. Got to protect the white comfort. But it's all intentional. And it's a fucking thorn in the eye.
It's fucking exhausting is what it is. It's fucking exhausting. All right, let's keep going here.
It's so easy for you to notice when there are no white people around, but you hardly ever notice when there are no black people around.
And I'm to this day, I'm not saying I'm guilty of that. I will be in a place with Leslie where she's the only black person, and it's not anything that I have to actively think to myself, oh, let's look around. Are there other black people? Nope, there's no. Oh, Leslie's the only black person. I have to go out of my way to address the fact that she's the only black person in the room. And I've been in many situations where I'm the only white person. And there is, and I can't say this is for everybody, but for me, there's an instantaneous recognition when you're the only person of that race in a group of people. Whether it's a spider sense or a fucking, you know, some sort of nervous system, whether, you know, whatever it is, it's an instant recognition. And it's not necessarily discomfort, but it's just like, oh, you know, like, at least for now, for me. And maybe at some point I was not necessarily as comfortable as I am now, but it's instantaneous. Like, you put me in a room blindfolded and I open my eyes, one of the first things I'll know, I'm the only white person in this group of people. The reverse, you know, it's almost not noticed. Like, if you do that test, drop someone in a room blindfolded, name 20 things about this room. I'm the only white person in this room will be in the first, like, two or three things I personally would say. In the inverse scenario, there are no black people in this room might not ever come up in the first 20 things. This woman's got a glass of wine. That guy's got shoes. This guy's got red hair. This guy's bald. These two look like they're together. There are no black people. Even again, and just as aware as I am of race and discourse, wouldn't be on my top 20 things to think about or identify. And again, think that's just, you know, a hallmark of supremacy, whitewashing and centering on whiteness. You don't think we're not thinking about race. We don't ever have to think about it.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it.
It's just like Carl was talking about that meeting. I'm sure they didn't think anything of it. Like, oh, yeah, black guy's coming in here, whatever. Oh. They don't care because they're all comfortable there. So.
Yeah, they probably all thought sort of horrible shit. Carl's black guy, that's good. We need a black guy. We need a black guy.
We're going to get black guys. Black guys.
Too bad he's not a black guy.
Gotta get the black guy. Mm.
Why is your goal to be colorblind?
And there's so many different types of people in the world, yet you can't see color?
Curiosity.
Why do you want to say the N-word so badly?
I don't use it. What makes you think you can?
Why do you always want to touch our hair?
All right, so we'll start with the N-word one, and then we'll move on to the hair situation.
Yeah.
I just, the N-word, I can't. I don't know. I don't get it. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, that one baffles me as well. I mean, out of all the words that are in the world, what is it about that one that you want to say?
Why?
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
White people, you cannot use the N-word. No N's in G-A, N's in E-R. Not one of my friends. And, oh, they can use it, but we can't. Stop. You're done. You can't use it. No.
And if you don't know, now you know.
We interrupt. Yeah,
nope. Just stop. That's my only statement on it. Just right. You can't. And I feel like there's some sort of, like, taboo, like, you know, like you look in the mirror, like Candyman, Candyman, Candyman. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's some sort of like, I don't know what it is, but like I feel like white people are sitting around like, did I dare you? I dare you to say that.
Say it.
And you know, it does. It holds some sort of weird fucking.
It's magical. Somehow.
I don't know, and I think part of it's taboo, and then the other part. This is, again, just hypothesis. I don't know any. You know, this is just my own back of an envelope, maybe hypothesis, that in the black community's reappropriation of the word, it's taken on a John-like quality. It can be used in a variety of different contexts and meanings and sayings and phrases, and between black people in a non-negative way. And I'm not debating that. I'm not having that conversation whether, you know, people should or shouldn't, ends in ER. Not me not having that conversation. But the word itself has a grammatical capability that adds to that allure for white people. Like, yeah. It's a great word. I could use it in all these fucking contexts. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just
right. Yeah.
But
a lot of times when I hear people make the argument that they want to say it, it comes down to fairness. Why is it?
It's not
why is
fair.
It here that you're right. Yeah. Exactly.
There, guys.
Context. That's not why. That's fair, not my only man. Answer. Context.
Because not fair.
The word was made by white people to fucking abuse and terrorize people of color, and you just can't. That's it. There's context. You're not allowed. Stop.
Exactly. All right, here we go.
Culture, it was okay to touch people without their permission.
Why do you feel like having one black friend makes you a cultural expert or not a racist?
Is your only black friend comfortable with being the reason why you can't be racist?
This is what we talk about all the time, because I will meet white people that
only black men know that you're,
especially white women that are in relationships with black men, like they think somehow they have some sort of like generalized pass to say any sort of outlandish shit that they want to say, and they can't. I'm going to make that blanket statement out there to everybody. They cannot. And I would challenge that the opposite should be true. If you are in a committed relationship or any kind of relationship with a black person, whether it's romantic or a best friend or whatever, like you should be, the expectation should be that you're better than the average white person.
More.
Like that isn't in that situation.
I would
not
say
the other
just
way.
Again, our relationship, you know, we've been together a long time, and my thoughts and views certainly, you know, over that period of time have evolved and changed. And I was, you know, never like a complete idiot, ignorant tool bag. But remember we talked about Innes and how I like asked him all these questions, like I was a dumbass. I was like, why is there a Miss Black America?
Oh, yeah.
In that same sort of manner, our relationship afforded me the ability to have conversations where I could ask things and frame things that now I can look back and say, oh, you know, my thinking was problematic in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. But you don't know that you don't know that. Like, you only know that like after the fact. So when you don't know that, you frame things poorly. And in a non-committed partnership where there's a space to have that, you could be like, something like, I'm like, get the fuck out of here, you know? So it for me, it not only demands that I be better, but it, as a relationship, has created a space that allows me to be much better as a white person, because we can have those very frank conversations and discussions.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, you, like you said, once you get into that relationship, you have that bond and that trust with that person. So, you know, even though you're asking the questions, that other person knows it's not coming from a place of being malicious. It's more so curiosity. And as you get more entrenched in that relationship or whatever that may be, you become more comfortable asking those questions, and you begin to understand a bit more as well. So I can definitely see that as time has gone on, you've kind of turned that corner in the way that you think about things.
Agreed.
For sure.
By that logic, then I'm not racist. I have a ton of white friends. Comfortable cursing at your parents.
Why do you kiss your dogs on the mouth?
I want to know about that.
Kissing
one.
Dogs on the mouth?
Yeah, what is that?
Come here, girl. Where's my dog?
What's that about,
come
Drew?
What is that one?
Oh.
We just do. We just do.
But why, though?
Because it's
how like, about the cursing at your mother's and your dad's?
Yeah.
What's that one?
Buddy.
Come on, man. What's that one about?
Fuck him.
You know, my mother listened to the show, so...
Why's it gotta be
she
fucking?
She has informed us that she listens.
Why's
to the
it gotta
show?
Be fucking?
What's up, Mom?
How come you can't pronounce black names like Quvenzhané? but can say names like Schwarzenegger, Galifianakis, and LaBeouf just fine.
Galifianakis
is rolls right off the tongue, right? Y'all trolling. Black Lives
Why
Matter.
Why do you feel like all lions' lives matter, but black lives don't?
Why is a lion's life in Africa more important than the lives of black people here in America? What does Simba ever do for you?
I get it.
And that one I really struggled with. Like, was it Jimmy Kimmel that cried about it?
Or yes, it was Jimmy Fallon. It was Jimmy Kimmel.
I mean, like, literally shed tears on his fucking thing talking about Cecil the Lion. And I think it's...
I'm crying.
Well, and this is, you know, the why is even in the attention that not all, but some of the deaths of black individuals at the hands of police have gained national prominence, black individuals don't have humanity in the general white person's mind, so that it didn't get viral in the sense that Cecil the Lion could, because Cecil the Lion is innocent and has humanity, and all white people are going to pass that around. Oh, Cecil, what happened to Cecil? This is so terrible. Oh my God. And I'm not saying that like he should have been killed or whatever, but it's very the juxtaposition of the outrage and the just, you know, the moral and instant swift action. You know, the moral indignation and the swift action that was prompted after Cecil's killing, was Cecil's killing illegally? Was he poached legally? It was a legal hunt, was it not? Wasn't it against the law?
I don't know. I don't know what the laws are. Does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
I want to know. Does it matter, though?
But white people's reaction was so swift and so immediate because Cecil had, you know, he was possessing of humanity and innocence, two things that black individuals are stripped of by white society.
Lion King was an awesome movie, but so was Selma and so was Malcolm X.
Why is it so hard for you to acknowledge your privilege?
How does it feel to not be the spokesperson for your entire race at any given time?
Must be nice.
The comment about why is it so hard to acknowledge your privilege, yeah. There was a thread on Twitter where this one dude was like, you know, blah blah blah, and he ended up saying something like, you know, I had my privilege that one time, but I'm basically an honorary black person. Like, literally, like, oh, just the one time you had that privilege?
Just that once, guys.
And everyone's like, how do you be an honorary black person? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't think we give those out.
No?
I'm not aware of that award.
No.
And Bill Clinton got his revoked, so.
He never had a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Sorry to say. He never had
Not
one.
Even playing the that fucking the, sax that, on Arsenio.
That dude is the epitome of white privilege. He literally got a Hummer in the White House. At the Oval Office. I'm not saying. I don't know what else. It's like you look up white privilege and it's like the definition.
I'm just saying, me, regardless of race, that's a stressful job. And
you know what?
In the Oval Office, that's like the bossest thing ever. It's terrible. It was an intern. I'm not saying getting a blowjob is bad. It shouldn't have been an intern. It doesn't be like you can get a blowjob in the Oval Office. I don't care. You're president. You're getting a Hummer in the Oval Office.
White privilege.
Go for it.
White privilege.
That's not privilege.
Let Obama try some shit like that and see what happens.
He's not stepping out on Michelle.
Of course he's not. Why would he? That's hardly the point. The point is, let him try some shit like that.
I'm just saying.
Any of the other outlandish ass shit that Clinton did then and continues to do now.
I'm saying we make it to the White House, we're christening every fucking room in that bitch. War room, fucking Oval Office.
Luckily, there's no chance of that. So
I'm just saying. I'm not mad about it, like, just in the Oval Office.
Just in case, guys. We throw our hats in the ring. Very white guy, 2016.
I said we make it to the Oval Office. I didn't say it's me.
I'm definitely not going to no.
Give me a tour. This fucking broom closet's opening right over here.
Banned from the White House now. Wonderful. Now we're going to put in to get to the tour and be like, I'm sorry, you have already indicated that you will defile the White House. You cannot come on the tour.
Now the Department of Homeland Security file on you is like, they come to White House. Looking to defile court room.
Yeah, they let you use social media. We'll be periscoping.
Exactly.
Come on, Leslie, get in here.
We on this tour, yo. Broom closet.
Okay, good. Anyway.
Did I answer it for white people?
Yeah, that's it. That's all the questions. Thank you for answering.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So did you hear about Shrek the Renegade Sheep, Carl?
I heard about that.
Yo, this sheep this is dude. Crazy. This fucking dude.
Bad hair. Bad wool.
In case people didn't know, you shear sheep, I think, often.
Every year.
Is it every year or multiple times? At least every year. So this sheep, they nicknamed Shrek because the way he looks, he hid in a cave. Managed to hide out in a cave and avoid shearing for 6 years. Six years. His coat was like just dumb. Was it, how many pounds was it? It made 20 suits.
20 motherfucking suits, yo.
20 suits worth of hair.
20 suits worth of wool.
They said that he had escaped and he went and hid in there. And the thing is that goats in the wild, or sheep in the wild, they actually shed their coat naturally. But domesticated sheep, because they know that they're going to get sheared, they don't. And so obviously he was domesticated. And they think he probably came out because he was like uncomfortable at that point.
Yeah. So the domesticated sheep get sheared, the hair will keep growing and growing and growing if they don't go and get sheared, whereas a wild sheep sheds it every year. So they think Shrek had heat stress, mobility issues, and vision impairment.
He couldn't even see. You should
see like,
the picture.
6 years, guys, this hair is out of control.
You have to
come
go
shear
to
me.
The show notes and just see how come crazy. Shear me. The guy who said when he found him, he wasn't quite sure it was a sheep. Like, that's how bad it was. He was like, is that a sheep? Maybe it's a sheep. I'm not sure.
Hot.
Just
it's
look at
hot.
A mess. He's like giant ball, a snout. Like his eyes, you can't even see his eyes.
Yeah.
Yo, it's crazy. Then they did like a whole show to shear him. And then he was tiny and he has the cutest little
little skinny
tiny thing. And he has a little ice windbreaker, says Shrek on it. So good for him. Shrek. We love Shrek. You. Love you, Shrek.
Good work.
Yeah. So from a fictional name for a real animal, we came across this really amazing rant about a fictional animal on a cartoon. So I don't know if everybody knows, but I love the show Arthur. You know Arthur, right, Carl?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
The aardvark. And I said, hey, what a wonderful kind of day. Anyways, I love Arthur. It's so funny. The show is really hilarious. And his sister, DW, is like my prototype for life.
With the glasses, dude.
She is the original shade thrower. One time, I just saw this today. Somebody posted it. I've been like, I don't know, people have been sharing Arthur stuff. That she came home dressed from head to toe like Arthur and says to him, guess who won the ugliest costume contest in school today? Shade. She's his entire outfit from head to toe. Arthur was like, no, this bitch didn't. Anyway, so we came across this amazing rant about Arthur, the show.
From Chrissy Chula.
Yes, Chrissy Chula.
Me and the crew, that's what I call my friends now. They're the crew. Me and the crew, okay, I'm going to stop saying that. It just got old. We were hanging out in this office on campus. You know, sometimes we hang out there. That's our usual hangout spot in between classes. Sit there, chill, we talk about random stuff, and there's a TV in there because it's a little lounge. And one day we were watching Arthur. Yes, Arthur the cartoon. Yes, we are grown, don't judge us. It's not just for kids anymore. The life lessons are simple yet profound. Not just for the kids anymore. Okay, don't judge me.
Simple and profound.
Word up.
Stop rolling your eyes.
Yes, God bless. Okay? Arthur.
Cool. So we were watching Arthur, and a certain individual who I will try not to name his name, even though, you know, maybe in the heat of the moment, I might just yell it out because I'm angry. It comes out, you know, whatever. So, certain individual had a problem with Arthur. Now, everybody knows Arthur is an aardvark. If you watch the cartoon, you've heard of the cartoon, he's an aardvark. This is not up for discussion. This is not a debate. It's not necessary for a dialogue to happen about what he is. He's an aardvark, and it's a cartoon. This person got into an argument with all of us saying Arthur's not realistic because that's not what an aardvark looks like. His nose isn't long enough. Realistic? It's a cartoon, sir. It is a cartoon. What? Realistic? It's a cartoon. He argued with us all damn day. So you telling me you ain't got no problem with bunnies wearing sweaters and going to ice cream shops? You ain't got no problem with rats teaching bears and monkeys and mice English and math? And what the fuck is Binky? Is he a bear or is he a geranimo? whatever. You ain't got no problem with that. You ain't got no problem with that. You know, all of that is cool. Monkeys riding in limos, fine. Chimps riding on horses, alright. You know, what other damn animals on there? There's like a cat. They have a pet dog. That's fine. Like, it's a family of Albrights. They have a pet dog. And there's a baby in there, the little girl like a monkey. That's cool with you. But you have a problem with the length of his nose, because that's not realistic. It's a damn cartoon. It is a damn cartoon. If we could point out all the things that are not realistic, we'd be here for a while. We'd be here for quite some time. And he kept arguing it. And then he graduated to whispering it the whole time. Keep in mind, the show done went off. We'd have changed the channel four times over. And he just kept whispering, it's not realistic. He's not realistic. Well, what is he then? And then we pulled up pictures to show, oh, we pulled it up on the internet to show. Well,
it goes on for like another so 4 minutes.
Oh my God. She's hilarious.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yes, we'll put it in the show notes. She is so freaking funny.
That's where you draw the line?
Realistic.
Really? Realistic. It's a cartoon, sir.
Sir.
I love this, sir.
Sir is great.
In fact, it's, I think, who was it? In Argentina? Someone was making fun of me. They knew.
Yeah, because when you get mad when you say sir. Sir. When sir comes out, it's like, oh, shit.
When it's like sarcastic or something, like, sir.
Sir.
Yeah. Sir.
Sir is never good. Yeah, definitely not. So, I guess it's time to talk about Laughing While Black. My goodness. My goodness. Yeah. My goodness. So if you hadn't heard by now, the Napa Valley Wine Train sparked outrage on social media this past weekend when a group of mostly black, 11 black and one white woman, a book club, were kicked off the train because a white woman complained that they were laughing too loudly. Yes, you heard me correct. That was a wine train, so a train where you drink wine on it, and it takes you to multiple other places to drink wine. They were kicked off for laughing too loudly. They were paraded directly through the entire length of the train to be let off the train, where police officers were waiting on them to exit the train. This group included an 80-year-old. And a woman who had just recently had surgery on her knee and was walking with a cane. And they were left on the side of a dirt road to wait with said police officers for a vehicle to come and pick them up.
The fuck, man. That is the grossest fucking thing ever.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, the saddest thing to me was reading Lisa Renee Johnson, who's the member, the head of the book club, and she kind of put together the wine tour. They do a trip together every year, and they thought this would be an awesome end of year trip for them to end their book club season. And it's sad reading like her tweets and her Facebook posts from earlier in the day. She posted them getting in the car. She posted them arriving. She posted them on the train. She posted her first glass of, I mean, it was so like, she was so happy and excited to be there, and they were having such a great time. And then to see it deteriorate to where it went to. And it's just been, obviously, everybody was outraged hearing about this online, and the hashtag people were using was Laughing While Black. And of course, you know, just ignited, and you know, as we all are want to do, started sharing our own stories of similar instances where laughing or having fun or being joyous while black became unacceptable and untenable in the space that we were in.
The video in the library where the young man was literally sitting down and she's like, "You're being aggressive. I'm waiting."
It wasn't a library, it was
it was somewhere on campus.
It was an admissions office.
Okay,
whatever,
on campus. Yeah, he's waiting is being aggressive now.
Yeah.
You know, the story revolved a lot about the wine train. I'd like to know who everyone was on the train that watched these women get marched down, taken to the police, didn't say a fucking goddamn thing. I'd like to know who the cops were, who's the person that called the cops, the whole thing. And then they, and I'm putting huge fucking, what was it, a non-pology, an un-pology? I forget which of our type of not-pologies it was.
Non-pology, but, yeah.
Well, but their apology was, we're sorry. They didn't take any responsibility for their actions, but said, you know, we should have put you in a private car where you could be as loud as you wanted to be. Literally, that's like the phrasing they used, which is basically saying, like, oh, I'm sorry we didn't, you know, like sequester you black people privately so you could, you know, not disturb all the rest of the white people. Sorry, our fault. Literally, that's their apology.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here.
Well, let's I'm going to play a quick video. They were actually on Roland Martin's show on News One. So I'll play a quick video of the women and what they had to say about all of that real quick.
Look, I mean, again, I don't drink, but I would think if you're taking a train ride through Napa Valley, it's supposed to be a joyous deal. People would be talking and laughing, things along those lines. What the heck happened here, Tony?
You're correct. Everybody who goes on the train is having the experience that they've carved out for themselves. At least they were trying to, and it sounds like the book clubs, they were having a great time. Unfortunately, there was, you know, the incident, and just like Lisa's explaining, it got to the level where they were escorted from the train.
And Tony, you've issued an apology.
I have. I spoke with Lisa, and I thought we had a great conversation on the phone the other day. We're actually supposed to have some follow-up conversations. I look forward to those. We've also done a public apology as requested. And really, you know, we made a mistake. Unfortunately, I can't go back and correct it. However, you know, we're trying to move forward. And on top of the apology, we really would love to have a group of them up to 50 and really to let them have the experience that they planned on having. Plus, and you know, even a better time.
So when you say a group of 50, I mean, obviously, some folks may have flown in for this or driven in. And so what are you offering to them? And also, what about your staff? Is there anything dealing with training, anything along those lines dealing with them?
As for staff training, we have already contacted Mayor Willie Brown, and he's actually working with us to carve out some additional like diversity training for onboard service.
First of all, right there, like anything with the word diversity irritates me. Yep. And like, why are you contacting the mayor? Like, what the fuck does he have to do with this situation? Why are you not contacting the 11 goddamn women? Have them come tell their fucking story
and again,
to your goddamn staff and tell them how it felt to be paraded through that fucking train because one goddamn white person decided they were unhappy with the level of noise coming from, oh my God, these black women, these old middle-aged black women from a fucking book club. Fuck out of here.
And the answer is like going to rehab after the fact. Like, what? That's not the solution. Like, you know, how about take responsibility for the shit you did?
And the thing is, I don't know if they're going to mention it. I probably won't play the rest of this because it's already fucking irritating me. And I want to talk to Carl about this a little bit tangentially, you know, more situationally. But the thing that they didn't mention was that they put up this blatant lie of a post on social media once people started coming after them saying that the women were belligerent and they were swearing at people on the train and at staff, and they had to delete it. He's like, that was incorrect. You know, it wasn't true. It's like, that's not a mistake of what happened on the train. That's you, your PR team, your entire goddamn company thinking it's okay to shit and lie about black people because you don't think that anybody's going to fucking believe them. And fuck you for that.
What you just said is it's almost... I would be shocked if this wine train didn't have some level of professional PR involved now. Like, they're getting on the, you know, they're all over the news. It's a big ass deal. And with some crisis PR team involved, they still came out with some water down, like, nah, sorry, we didn't, you know, put you black people in a private car. We could be as loud as you wanted to be. Like, that's the apology? Fuck you. Fuck you. That does not. And like Leslie said, have you called these women? Have you called them? You know, like, we offered them refunds. What the fuck? Are you going to offer them fucking trauma and post-traumatic stress fucking because of this shit? Fuck out of here. It's so gross.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Leslie.
No, I was going to say, Carl, I know when we talked about it briefly, like on Twitter or whatever, you were just saying, you know, that this is a similar instance. I think every black person has that time that this has happened to them, certainly. So you know, what did you think about when you saw it? Because I honestly, Drew can tell you, like, I got so pissed off. It was like, like, I saw red. I got so angry. Just seeing the pictures and fucking irritated me beyond. So I'm curious to hear what your thoughts were.
Yeah. So similar incident. And I was surprised at how many people, you know, so I obviously have a lot of friends on Facebook, and shout out to Mary Rachel. She actually sent this to me and she said, hey, you should have this for the show. So she's also a listener as well.
Ooh, shout out.
Mary Rachel, what up?
What's up?
But yeah, so something similar has happened to me, T, and some other friends at Hooters of all places. So every year we used to go and watch the NCAA tournament at Hooters. So hopefully all your listeners know what Hooters is. It is a sports bar. So, you know, it's during tournament time.
Fairly rowdy one at that, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're watching the game, having a conversation, laughing a little bit. A waiter comes over to us and says, hey, you guys are being so loud. Can you keep it down or else we'll have to ask you to leave?
What?
And we look at each other and...
At Hooters?
At Hooters.
During March Madness. At Hooters.
Hooters. Hooters.
Come on.
Drew.
Come on.
It was Hooters.
You got to keep it down, Carl.
Yeah. So, needless to say, we kind of paid after that and never went back. But it was just... It was at Hooters.
Yeah, and I don't know if you...
places. So when I saw that, I mean, it was just flashbacks. I'm like, really? Really? It's just, sometimes it's taxing and frustrating when things happen like that.
Yeah. I'm writing this article for Vox that's going to be published next week. I'll share it with people online and such when it is, about my experience as a Black woman at an elite boarding school. And in the process of my research, I've been interviewing a bunch of other Black alums from my high school, and it's astounding. And I think the oldest graduating class I've interviewed was like 1984, and the youngest was like 2011. So I have a pretty wide berth of Black women that have attended the same school, and the stories are like scarily similar.
Yeah.
Always the same thing, and it's like, yep, you know, constantly being monitored, especially if we were gathered in groups, always coming over to our table in the lunchroom, you guys are being too loud, you're laughing too loudly, basically a consistent message of you're too much and you need to bottle that shit in. Okay.
Exactly.
And you know, the questions are, why do you always have to sit together? Why don't you mix it up? And it's like, why don't you tell those Korean students to go mix it up? You see those girls over there in the field hockey skirts and their blonde ponytails? Why don't you tell them to fucking mix it up? Why are you coming over to our table telling us this constantly over and over again? So, it put me back there. I was just like, grr, I started just like getting like, so angry. Oh my gosh. But I'm really happy to see one that they were like, fuck you and your wine train. We ain't going nowhere near that motherfucking shit. I don't care how many offers you make. And also his bullshit ass apology was like, we should have known you were going to be loud and we should have put you somewhere where you wouldn't, you know, hurt the delicate sensibilities of our real customers. So that's our bad. Like, fuck you for all of that. Mm. Assholes.
Before we move on, maybe this will make you feel better, Leslie.
Maybe.
New Skippy Snack Bars presents The Nutshell!
Skippy Snack Bar!
First you take the Skippy and you spread it, you spread it.
Then you take granola and you crunch it, you crunch it.
Skippy peanut butter, creamy goodness, serving tons of creamy.
Skippy Snack Bar!
Skippy, that's what's in the jar. The very same Skippy, that's what's in the bar. Creamy, take me say we love it.
That elephant is high as fuck! I'm serving.
Skippy Snack Bar.
That's a commercial from like 20 years ago.
Literally,
for Skippy Snack Bars.
Yeah.
And it's elephants in like
a rasta rave elephants.
And they're they're doing like
and
a
it's
dance
like
hall.
All the girls are singing. They've got like
Skippy,
they've all got dreads
in the
and ears and shit.
Very same thing. That's what's in the jar.
It's hilarious.
Skippy Snack Bar.
The best thing about those elephants is that we were living in New Orleans, actually.
No, Chicago.
I thought it was New Orleans. I was pretty sure it was New Orleans we were living in. And it would come on like at like
2 a.m.
in the morning.
It was Stoner,
you know?
Central, dude.
Completely. And they had to end up pulling it because there was this like subtle like.
Oh, the crowd surfing.
Yes,
no.
He's crowd surfing. And there was also this like, they're Rasta elephants. So the illusion that it's alluded to
it,
that they're smoking weed. And then that's who should be eating these snack bars.
But,
but it's cartoon. So it's marketed to kids.
Right.
So it's like this whole thing.
Listen, I bought a box of them fucking snack.
I bet you did.
Shit, work.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness.
Skippy.
That's what's in the bar. Anyways.
And then one really takes like a bite of the snack bar and her eyes are like,
oh my gosh, she's so
glazed.
She's
just
so,
like squinting.
Like,
ooh.
It's so funny. She's like, she's so into it. It's hilarious. Okay. Anyways, put that in the show notes so people can see that.
I thought that might make you laugh.
Yeah, it's funny. So have you been watching? Did you watch Fear of the Walking Dead or no?
Heck yeah. I heard the review yesterday. So a couple things I wanted to clear up.
All right, let's do it.
A bit of confusion on your part.
Okay, what's that?
So Drew is, during the podcast yesterday, Drew was a little unsure about how they came back in L.A. and how they didn't come back in in Atlanta on The Walking Dead.
Right.
So at this point, the audience knows more about what's happening than the people do in Fear the Walking Dead. So if you think back to The Walking Dead, when they're at the CDC, I think it's season two, the guy at the CDC tells, he whispers into Rick's ear, but you don't know what he told Rick until the end of that season. So what he told Rick was, everybody's infected, so as soon as you die, you turn automatically.
Right.
So that's why the guy, I don't remember his name, the guy that was trying to sell drugs that got killed in
Cal.
The...
Cal.
Cal, yeah. That's why he turned immediately. So I think there was some confusion there on your part, Drew.
No, but I thought that it started out where that wasn't the case, because I thought
I wasn't confused. Leslie was, but go on.
You. Well, no. So
I thought that in the beginning of The Walking Dead that was not the case, and that you had to be bitten or whatever, because I remember them burying people that were not zombies.
Well, what happened was you didn't have to be... So they didn't make that clear until later in the season. There's the scene where Shane and Rick are in the field. And Rick ends up shooting Shane, and he turns right there after he shoots him. That's the first time you actually see someone die. All the other times, you either see them getting bit and they turn, or they're already dead.
Oh.
You didn't see up until that point someone actually...
A non-already turned person. Killed through natural non-zombie
right.
reasons.
Exactly. But you would think people would have figured that out by now, but I guess that's really like the main way you lost people was due to zombies.
So we were both right, but the real answer is that was just the first and only time it had been seen, and it was right. probably exactly. just evident before that you were... A carrier, but it does seem like if you were a carrier or everyone was a carrier, there was some sort of temporal, like something triggered it on. Yeah, because overnight everyone turns into zombies. It was like the day before people died, it was fine.
Right. At some point.
I read an article where they said they're actually not going to go back and explain exactly what triggered that.
You don't have to.
Starts that event, which I agree.
No, then they can do a prequel, and it'll be like
when they sell it to Disney, when they sell the franchise to Disney.
Fear of the Walking Dead.
When it's Disney's Walking Dead,
exactly.
Yeah, Disney's Walking Dead
with the theme park.
But I actually like this show because it's a huge contrast in the feel of the show. So, you know, when you think, or for me specifically, when I looked at The Walking Dead, it was in Atlanta. It was more in the country. So a lot of wide open space. So as you watch The Walking Dead, there are a lot of scenes where it's really quiet. All you hear is crickets, and you may hear some leaves rustling. Flip side of that, in L.A., a totally different landscape. So the first thing I noticed when it started is there's a lot of noise in the background, whether it's cars, whether it's horns.
Yeah, that's true.
Different things like that. So to me, it brought a different feel, a different look to that world. Now, I'm curious to see how they work it in because obviously in Georgia, very widespread houses are very far apart. In L.A., everything's closer together, but you have different neighborhoods with different – with different ethnicities.
And I'm thinking, as you're saying now, Carl, how many shots could you...
Right.
Every other episode, there's a shot of a road with, like, kudzu and fucking, like, cornfields. You know what I'm talking about? Like, they've had open spans of road as a B-roll backdrop for scenes and footage that they're never going to have in this.
And they've been showing a lot of, like, skylines and shit like that, too.
It's a different approach.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
The park, maybe that's how they're setting the mood.
I don't know. Anyways, we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting, but it would seem to me like if something like that shit happened, that happened to those fucking idiots at the end of this first episode, you know what I would be? Out the fuck of Los Angeles. Deuces. I would be going as far away from any goddamn person as I possibly could.
Do you know what
I'd be like, Titus, where do we need to go?
Pop quiz. Where's the most, the best place to be? Zombie apocalypse.
Alaska.
I don't know if Alaska is number one.
I thought Alaska was up there.
The least populated
Montana
area.
Or something.
It's a combination of two things. Lowest population and?
What?
Coldest?
Highest armament.
How many guns there are?
Yeah, I think Wyoming or Oklahoma or one of them.
That's why I said Montana would be
good. Yeah, like Montana. Really good. Very low population
density.
You could
get fish and shit. Yeah, a lot of guns. That would be good.
A lot of guns, less people.
Have you been watching The Strain?
So I never got into The Strain.
Oh,
I
really?
I watched the first couple episodes last season. I was like, it's not for me.
We're like weirdly, like we watch it, but it's so passive. So it's like weird.
Yeah.
And I definitely thought last season was way better than this season, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
But I think it's gotten better as the season's gone on, too. Don't you think?
It's gotten better. And it's, here's the thing. It's oddly able to be watched, but it almost kind of like it's convoluted
in
some ways.
It's confusing anyway. So you being confused, yeah. It's like you're supposed to be confused.
Yeah, it's a little bit punishing to the casual viewer in that regard. But you're right. You're supposed to be kind of confused, so it's okay.
Like the audience never knows everything, so it's okay. Yeah. Like it's like, oh, I'm confused, so what? I'm just a little more confused than every other asshole that's paying full attention to this shit. So it doesn't really matter.
I tell you, what I did see, though, and I don't know if you guys had a chance to see it yet, is Shredded Compton.
Oh, no, so we haven't seen it yet.
So very mixed feelings about it. First of all, I thought it was good, but totally watered down. And I had this conversation with someone else. If you weren't around experiencing that at that time,
right,
when they were out, you know, you take it, oh, this is a pretty interesting story. But for us that were there and actually experienced it and lived it, totally watered down.
Yeah.
But it was still good. You know, told the story as best as they could. But it was funny because, you know, they almost had the group kind of in a hero complex. So there's like one scene where they're all walking slow motion. Stuff's kind of going on in the back. It's almost equivalent to, you
like,
know, when the
with the doves flying and all that shit. Yeah.
So, right. Exactly.
Those John Woo movies. Yeah.
But at the same time, a bit of pride. You know, it was weird because I remember how just everybody was – they had such negative press. Everybody hated them. There was PMRC. Is that the –
Explicit Lyrics. Yeah, Tipper Gore.
Right, with Tipper Gore, exactly. So to see them go from that to where some of these guys are now, it was kind of a sense of pride. It's like, you know, that was me also. You know, I was back then when people didn't think, you know, I was going to do anything or thought less of me. And now you look at us, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, we are tax-paying, contributing to society. So,
and it made money. They did well, and it's EP.
Yeah, made money. They made buku dollars.
And
it was EP'd
by Dre and Cube. So I don't fault them for, you know, cleansing their shit. But, like, yeah. I'll just say, again, me, white dude, kind of suburban, NWA was, you know, a little bit more, I wasn't into the West Coast nearly. I liked Ice-T a whole bunch, but I wasn't in NWA that much. But if you asked me up until, like, you know, a good period of time, like 94, 95, even, I don't know, like, name something about Dr. Dre from NWA days, like, wait, punched D. Barnes in the face, you know what I mean? He beat up a reporter, it was a big deal.
Lost over that.
Yeah, of course they did. I think it's interesting for me. I mean, I think we'll end up seeing it, if not in the theater, certainly when it comes out on DVD. But I just the idea of it, and, you know, this idea of rewriting it, like, there is something to be said for, like, waiting the proper amount of time to do this sort of stuff. And I just don't know if enough time has passed. Like, I feel like, you know, we're still too young, having had experienced it, to have distance from it at the same time. And so I don't know. There's some issues that come up when you try to do things too quickly sometimes. I don't know. That's just my thoughts on it and why I think it's interesting. I mean, I see why they went and did it. Obviously, there's a good market for it right now and all of that, you know, so it's makes sense on that note of things. But, you know, when you try and tell the cleaned up story and it's not, you know, from 40 years ago or 50 years ago, it becomes a little more tricky.
So Dre, like, a few days ago, even had something in the New Yorker where he apologized to women he's hurt in the past. But D and Michelet and a few
fuck
other people, like,
that dude.
You know, you didn't even use our names. Yeah. You just said, like, women in the past.
Completely. Exactly. And 120,000%. And the thing is, like, I think it's good to start having these conversations about, because it's not just, I mean, it's not just NWA. I mean, you look at so many, even quote-unquote conscious rappers that have the same issues of misogyny and their depiction of women and things like that, and fucked up notions about homosexuality and all of those kinds of things that should be addressed. And to me, at the heart of any discussion surrounding NWA or hip hop in general is what black masculinity is and what that means in our society and what things contribute to the negative aspects of that. So to, I hope that that stimulates those kinds of conversations. I don't know if it will, but I think it's a good one to have.
Well, I think it's already starting to take that turn. So you compare NWA to Drake. So two vastly different approaches to what they do, but you know, Drake is probably as popular or more so than NWA was back in the day as well. So, you know, for I think some people, they're actually taking it on and making a conscious effort to not go that route. But we'll see what happens. But, you know, I had an interesting conversation with the people that I went with. So I went with another couple. And so during the movie, they're introducing some of the other people that were kind of not ancillary, but kind of in the NWA world, like Snoop. You see DOC, so on and so forth. So I'm thinking at some point they're going to have an NWA universe, almost like a Marvel universe. So, you know,
a Snoop movie next or something.
Yeah, so next I think it's going to be Snoop and Tupac. So Tupac was in the movie as well. So if you look at all the folks and groups they kind of influenced from that camp, you could almost have like a Marvel universe and call it the NWA universe. So you got all these different movies coming out about all the different artists. So it'll be interesting to see how they leverage that and see if they can make more good movies out of that.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. They definitely need to wait a little bit longer for Snoop Dogg's story, so let me just say that.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to let a little bit more time pass before they go into that route. But they could do JJ Fad, though. I'd like to see that one. Let me just...
Yeah, which they weren't mentioned there. There was no Yo-Yo in the
movie.
What
the fuck? See, that's the kind of shit I'm talking about.
I was very disappointed because I was a huge fan of Yo-Yo.
I love Yo-Yo. Don't try to play me out. Don't try to play me out. Ooh, hey, true. Yo. Find that song. My name is Yo-Yo. I'm not a ho-ho. Ooh, I love Yo-Yo.
Yeah. Yo-Yo. All right, Drew. What you got?
I don't have the video yet. Hold on.
Video. I got it already. How about that?
Yo, Jinx, man, we gotta find somebody that's down for hers, man. All these girls sipping, man. Who you think fit the category? Category, 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 category.
My name is Yo-Yo. I'm not a one more. I like to flow so swift.
It's got to be a gist.
Yo, let the beat lift.
As I rip and rhyme and rap and snap, all the girls who can't adapt to her back, I hit the 8-ball often. The earrings I wear are called dolphins. You know it's kind of soft, and if you touch it, you're living in a coffin.
I'm in the 90s,
you still in the 80s, right? I rock the mic, you say I'm not ladylike, but I'm a lady.
I kill,
you try to leave, and hit the front. So what you wanna do, but the play hit and run.
Custom beats, you simply can't get
none.
You're wetter, you're
playing with my yo-yo.
Yo-yo.
Don't try to play me out, don't try to play me out. 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 Don't try to play me out.
Oh man,
you gotta work the fade next time when you're on that.
She's so good.
Yeah, I can't front. After the movie, I did bust out all NWA CDs. You know,
I'm sure you gotta go. I mean, they got all that music playing in there, of course.
Right, hello. Exactly.
Got to. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our show. So, Carl, first of all, let everyone know where they can find you and follow you and all of that fun stuff.
Ooh, Johnner.
On Twitter and all that stuff.
On Twitter and all of that stuff, you guys.
I'm not seeing a lot of tweets from you. Maybe my algorithm isn't showing me your shit.
Who, me?
Yeah. You don't even see my tweets.
Nah, I don't get it.
Your Twitter feed is garbage.
Your timeline is garbage.
I think trash.
I think 2016, I'm going to unfollow
pure
everybody.
Pure trash.
Yeah, you got a lot of people, Drew.
Too many.
I'm
going to
unfollow
people.
Everybody.
10,000 fucking 20,000 people. It's
pretty,
bullshit.
It's pretty thick.
How many people follow you right now,
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
How many is it, though?
Why? You can look. I don't care.
I'm asking. You don't know? Really?
I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'll look right
22.
Now.
22.
But where can they find you, Carl?
I am on Twitter at CarlM3. Mm-hmm. You can also find me on the gram at CarlRM.
Do it for the gram.
That's how the kids say it, so I thought.
Yeah,
cool.
This is how the kids say it.
And then I also dabble a little bit of Tumblr, C3M Sun.
Bam. And for the record, Very White Guy has 22,900 followers.
What?
Apparently.
Drew? What the hell?
I got to unfollow a bunch, though.
Yeah, clearly. That's why I said his timeline is garbage. It's pure trash. You can find us again. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN. Of course, we're on Instagram, Tumblr, all of that good stuff at Interracial John. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack. That's MAC. You can find that guy at Very White Guy, enjoying his legion of followers, apparently, on Twitter. We have, as I mentioned,
the Hwive.
With the now.
The Hwive. Old,
that's right, the Hwive. The Hwive.
The wife.
Fuck both y'all.
The wife. We will be recapping Fear the Walking Dead every Wednesday with the illustrious Black Rob. So tune into that, and you can also send us feedback or any information you want to share about that show that you think of. Just give us a call, 657-JONERS. We have some great guests coming up next week. We have Nick Jew from What's the Tea podcast. Then we have the queen of podcasting, Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips on the 10th, and making his debut appearance here on The John, Leonard Brothers from Look and Lesson podcast is coming the week after that. So great to have Carl on for his monthly check-in with us. Is that better? Monthly check-in?
Monthly check-in's good. Monthly check-in.
Can we all agree to that one?
I like it.
What's up with Carl? What's up with Carl? Ooh-wee. What's up with Carl? What's up with Carl?
Mm-hmm.
You forgot to mention Pop Fury. Brian's
oh, yeah. We are giving a quick podcast shout out to Pop Fury podcast, which we played snippets of where they were recounting with Brian and Tyler their experience
at the
very rapey Steve Harvey show taping. So that's Pop Fury podcast. And we'll have that link.
I think you just named the show Very Rapey Steve Harvey. Yeah.
I guess that is the name of the show. God damn it.
Yeah, it is. Very Rapey Steve Harvey. You know that's the show.
There you go. Damn.
Bing. I was wondering, dude, we're like almost at the end. I'm like, what are we going to name the show? I haven't heard anything
yet. I was going to call it What's Up with Carl. I thought that was a good name. But
it is, but Very Rapey Steve Harvey just done.
Yeah, I guess that's
go for it.
Maybe kind of Rapey Steve Harvey.
No.
Very Rapey.
Very Rapey. Very Rapey. Yeah, Very Rapey Steve Harvey taping. So shout out to those guys. Oh, also, we're going to be periscoping our live reaction, just real quick Sunday reaction nights. On Sunday nights after Fear the Walking Dead ends. You can get an immediate reaction
it'll
from us on the Periscope.
9:30 Eastern this 9:30. Sunday.
It'll be 10 o'clock.
Be tight.
Why?
We're moving.
Yeah, hopefully.
Oh, that's right.
We'll get everything together.
Bam.
When is the official movie?
Sunday.
This Sunday. Yes. Be there.
So you move into our new house. Rah, rah. Yeah, so you have to come out soon. We can have you in the house for real when we tape.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
It'll be good. It'll be good. Right, I think that's it, Mr. Mac.
And just for because.
New Skippy Snack Bars presents The Nutshell!
Skippy Snack Bars! Put your Skippy and you spread it. Then you take granola and you crunch it. Skippy peanut butter, creamy goodness, serving time, so creamy. Skippy Snack Bars!
Skippy, that's what's in the jar. The very same Skippy, that's what's in the bar. Creamy, did you say we love it?
So silky, so smooth, it's delicious, delicious!
Snack bar.
Bye, everybody.
High five.